Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Absolutely. Dan.
Oh, boy.
Is there a specific hook to this particular day that may be unusual for the two of us?
Today?
Yeah, because you might know a lot about a certain event, and I don't know anything about a certain event.
An event?
I'll be goddamned. WrestleMania. God damn it, Dan. Catch on!
I do know a lot about WrestleMania. You don't know anything about WrestleMania.
See, there you go!
But more specifically to this podcast, I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I don't know anything about him.
So it's a very similar thing. Something I want to get out of the way real fast before we get into my thoughts about WrestleMania, because I have a ton.
Yeah.
I'd like to give a shout out to a new donor. What's going on out there? Someone who I think you'll like their name. What's up out there, Jordan?
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much for joining up with the team.
I got nothing. There aren't really any famous Jordans.
You weren't going to try and say it was you? What about Jordan Peele? Right? Key and Peele? Isn't it Jordan Peele?
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah.
He's famous as fuck.
Yeah.
He wrote one of the best horror movies of all time. Fine. Jordan Peele, thank you very much for donating to the show. How about a goddamn tweet? Huh?
Why is it?
I don't know any Jordans.
Why is it that
Do you know,
your
the
name?
The other Jordan I know is the prophecy brother of mine.
Oh, that's true. The cult,
yes.
Relation.
Yeah.
So speaking of cults, people are in a
great
wrestling
transition.
Cult, and they had their high
Dan.
Church, yesterday
Dan.
As we're
great
recording
transition.
This, Sunday for WrestleMania. And, boy, I'll tell you what, I think I'm done with wrestling. And it's not.
What?
It's not.
Why was this one the backbreak?
Well, cause it's not for the same reasons that a lot of people complain about it. A lot of people are like, predictable, blah blah blah. You know, everyone complains like that after all of the big pay per views.
Okay,
and for me, it was just like I got to about hour four, and I was like, I don't know why I'm watching this.
Well,
I'm exhausted. I don't really enjoy it.
Right.
I don't know what's going on.
I think you enjoy your non enjoyment of it
to a certain extent. I will say that I had a number of thoughts in my boredom that were troubling.
Uh-huh.
The first is that they don't do a great job. What's
I'm
up?
I'm telling you. Do not say that the Jews could be exterminated. I really think that's a bad thought to have during WrestleMania.
Well, that actually comes into this a little bit.
I can't see how it could.
So within the first 10 minutes or so of the broadcast, they played a teaser.
There was a Nazi wrestler? Oh, boy.
So they played like a teaser clip for the upcoming SmackDown Women's Championship match between Charlotte and Asuka.
Right.
And they kept, and this is something they do a lot, they keep referring to Charlotte as being bred for supremacy.
Oh, I don't like that.
It makes me a bit
That's
uncomfortable
not good.
Considering she's like a
bred?
6-foot-something blonde Aryan goddess.
Okay, well. Well, I mean, Valkyries, I got nothing for this one. I'm going to go with a no. I'm going to go with a hard pass on this one.
And I grant that her dad is Ric Flair and that he used to be involved with a group called Evolution. And so there's some of these, like,
I don't know what a group called Evolution. Is he a genetic birther kind of guy?
No,
is he like
a, sort of like the evolution of wrestling. We're the next evolution of it. Or
oh, okay.
Like it.
All right.
Is it related to them? But
so thematically, you're saying that there might be a defense.
Right, but it still doesn't feel good.
No.
It doesn't
no.
feel good when you have a fucking super, tall, beautiful, blonde, white woman who's bred for supremacy.
Yeah, that's not great. That's not great.
So that's in the first couple
who is
minutes.
Who's the lady named, who's the lady in Red Sonja, though? Hmm? She was married to Flavor Flav or something?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know the...
Oh, yeah.
She was in,
Brigitte Nielsen?
Brigitte Nielsen, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
I'm just naming Valkyries at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the,
who else you got on your top five Valkyrie list?
I don't know. But the other thing that made me uncomfortable, and this is something that I understand isn't like necessarily a real criticism, but they played this teaser that's kind of, it has a little bit of a Nazi feel to it, in some ways.
They know their audience.
And then they had the men's battle royal, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, right? And so it's 30.
Wait, did they say it? Battle Royal?
I don't know. I don't care. They had 30 dudes in the ring, and they're all fighting with each other.
Yes.
And Matt Hardy ends up winning. And
Matt Hardy, I hate it when he wins.
Matt Hardy has a thing that he does where he deletes people. That's his sort of gimmick.
Oh, no.
And he has a hand gesture for delete.
No, I don't like a hand gesture.
And it's a hand gesture that's like this, making a delete, like a minus sign.
Like an X on the throat. Not exactly on the throat, but yeah.
Mm. And it's not a Nazi salute. But boy, when it's 70,000 people doing it in an arena, it feels very close.
Ooh, that's not good.
So that's within like the first 10 minutes I'm watching.
I kind of don't like 70,000 people doing anything together. That kind of bums me out.
Yeah. So anyway, it dragged on, and I guess some of it was good, but the only high point for me, and I know that I'm going to sound like the fucking stupidest wrestling fan in the world.
Uh-huh.
But there's this really giant guy named Braun Strowman.
Yes.
And he had a shot at the tag team titles, but he didn't have a partner.
So I've heard this one because my longtime buddy Matt Elfring writes about wrestling for GameSpot,
Does a great job over there.
Yes, he was very, very excited about the 10-year-old child.
Picked a 10-year-old kid out of the audience.
Is he gonna come back?
I don't care.
Is the 10-year-old gonna come back? I feel like he has to be a plant, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I don't care. I love the absurdity of it, and I don't give a fuck. It's very fun.
Yes.
And then the main event was Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. And like everyone complains about all that shit, cause it's a very repetitive match. It's happened a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And people are just kind of tired of it. I don't really care about that aspect of it, but Roman's head ended up bleeding a lot.
Oh, okay.
And I was watching it and I was just like, this is gross. This is disgusting. Like, I don't care if he cut himself like they do sometimes in wrestling.
Yeah.
Or if
it was actually from a strike. I learned that in the great movie, The Wrestler.
Yeah. They played. I don't care really what the situation was. It was grotesque and seeing it made me very sick. And between the just not really enjoying
it. Is he a member of the royal family? Does he have that hemophilia?
Mm.
You know, that's okay.
I don't know. Right. I did really enjoy NXT TakeOver New Orleans though. That was much better because it's much shorter.
you've become the old movie critic who's like,
a little bit.
Listen, hey, it was a great movie. Could have cut 10 minutes out.
Meanwhile,
could have cut 10 minutes out. No big deal. You could have cut 10 minutes out.
Meanwhile,
I don't like an hour and 40 long minute movie. Give me an hour and 30.
Meanwhile, we do a 9-hour episode about Endgame. So who am I to fucking talk? Anyway, I thought it was fine, but I don't know. I don't know how much I'm going to be watching in the future, but I am excited about a 10-year-old tag team champion.
Do you mean exactly as much?
Yeah, probably.
Because every time you get disillusioned after every single pay-per-view.
God.
And you keep going back, Dan.
Yeah, that's just boredom. Anyway, today, Jordan.
Thank you to our new donor, Jordan.
Yes.
That was what that was dedicated
to. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Today, what we're going to be going over is we're going to go back to the past. We're deep in the past today because Alex has been out of studio since Thursday.
Okay.
He is going to Washington, D.C. to do his press conference.
Which, as we know, is a 4-day-long trek via covered
wagon.
Stagecoach,
yes.
Yeah, is that what we're doing?
I assume.
Okay.
So he had Owen Schroyer hosting on Monday. He had Mike Adams hosting on Sunday, and then they just had a best of on Friday.
Mm.
So there's not a whole lot to work with here. And we're recording this on Monday, and I'm going to put it out on Tuesday instead of Wednesday this week because we might need to have an emergency recording.
Yes.
With the press conference.
Yeah. So I see what you're saying.
We need to not be backloaded or anything. We need to have forward progress.
All right.
For this, ridiculous press conference that's going to be happening on Tuesday. So I decided, let's go back to the past.
Yes.
And, we have been
like that movie.
Yes. The second one of them.
Yeah. Back to the past.
The third one where they had,
where they went back to the past.
Train.
Yeah. That was a great one.
So Jordan, we had been going back to 2008. Looking at stuff, and I've come to the issue that I keep listening to episodes, and they are like clips of interviews that he did on a previous episode spliced together and stuff.
Okay.
And it's very unreliable for me to get through, and it's just a time suck in 2008. So I decided to jump forward a bit, and so we find ourselves in June 2009. And today we're going to be going over the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of June 2009. and just seeing what we find. Let's see what happens.
Oh man, your ability to put your cards behind your vest. I don't know what's the saying there.
Keep them close
to the vest. Yes. Keep them tight. Not good. You're not good at it.
No, I mean we're gonna find a lot of interesting stuff. There's gonna be some ooh boys. And some just like, oh, it's interesting to see a snapshot of Alex Jones from almost a decade back.
Okay.
And I have experience. I've listened to a bit of these 2009 episodes, and it's much more like it's a radio show, as opposed to in 2008, where it's like sometimes it's a radio show, and then sometimes he's just here's a mishmash of shows for a week or whatever.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So we will go back to 2008 eventually, because we got to cover like the election and
right.
stuff like that.
Right.
We'll go back and find
who
those.
Wins.
Obama. I think.
Okay.
I think. I don't know.
I think we all lost.
Like a Alien versus Predator situation?
Exactly. Whoever wins, we lose.
So we start here on June 1st, 2009.
Yes.
And the first thing that I noticed right away is that Alex has a very different way of, like, his callers are very different back then.
Uh-huh.
His callers are all in it for themselves.
Okay, now I'm interested. Because nobody's buying products. They don't have products to buy. Nobody opens with, like, hey, Alex, first off, love your hair product or whatever
right.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
There's no formal, like, at the beginning of the call, just being like, I love Micro Z X or whatever.
Yeah.
So what they do instead is they go into business for themselves.
Okay.
And they try and promote their shit. Here's the first example of that.
Birdman in Florida, you're on the air.
Birdman.
Hey, brother Alex, how you doing?
Good, Birdman.
Congratulations on the Oscar.
Great, I really appreciate your program so much. If you give me a couple of relaxed minutes, I want to ask you if I can tell people about my old punk band, 1984.
Okay, go ahead and tell us about your punk band.
Fuck yes!
So.
Fuck yes!
We've got Birdman calling in.
Give me this... Hey, Alex, I just want to tell you about my mixtape. Oh, give it to me all day.
Already this show feels very different.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
But you can hear that sort of
Hey, Alex, can I get the directions to the Walmart?
You already hear like an exasperated tone in Alex, like, tell us about
your punk band. Go, so, it's a punk band, whatever.
So here's where that goes.
Well, from 81 to 85, that's all we ever sung about was everything that you guys talk about. And I would like to get someone to overdub some of your voices on some blank tracks from your programs to scream about the same thing. It's MySpace.com.
No free plugs.
MySpace.com. it's amazing that in 81 to 85, he was screaming about 9/11 trutherism. That's the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
That's a great punk band.
Alex puts up with it and is just like, all right. Then a little bit later, we get another call.
MySpace.com.
We get another call from another guy.
Well, what I wanted to call and tell you today, I had two things I want to say. You've been a great inspiration to us here at We Are Change North Carolina. I'm a member and co-organizer of that. And I've got me a radio show starting on Saturday mornings coming up, starting this Saturday. You mind if I throw a quick plug on it real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. It's called Eternal Vigilance with Justin Prim on revolutionbroadcasting.com. They're going to run it from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. First shows this week. I'm extremely proud of the opportunity to get a chance to do this. And Alex Jones is my inspiration.
Spoiler alert, that show is no longer on.
Oh, Eternal Vigilance flame out?
I think it might have, yes. Ah. But you see, there's this sense that, like, Alex, people think of Alex as, like, a way that I can get my thing out.
Right.
Back at this point, which is
pretty
interesting.
Because he didn't fucking care.
Yeah, and Alex is kind of still operating on some sort of, like, local radio vibe. Like a almost public access show kind of feel.
I like the idea of somebody giving out their website in a 10-second clip. Mm. Like, because if you've ever given anybody a website, they're like, okay, spell that for me.
Yeah.
And somebody, so they're saying like,
Alex's
well,
listeners
either,
can't spell vigilant.
Either, people are on their computer ready to type it in as I speak, or people are recording this and are willing to listen back to it to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that this is a good idea.
Yeah. I think that probably
which is why I feel like our many, many calls into Coast to Coast AM haven't worked out.
No, absolutely not.
No.
I just think it's fascinating that that's sort of the vibe that's going on with Alex at this point. It's entertaining. And then we get to
he's like a local radio station guy. Mm. He's like one of the failed comedians from the 80s who became a regional radio station DJ of some sort.
Yeah, yeah.
They do promotional, like, oh, we're gonna show up outside the minor league baseball's first day of the year, like that kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the narratives that he's selling aren't really even worth going over. They're all kind of just nonsense. Like he's screaming about how everything is about to collapse, which
right.
you can understand that
right.
sentiment in 2009, certainly. That was probably a prevailing feeling.
Well, it's
that
a weird
had.
Thing to feel whenever everything had already collapsed.
Also, he reads an article about society about to collapse from Pravda, which is fun.
Do they sell those purses?
Yes. The devil wears Pravda. he also screams about how Congress is being blackmailed, but he doesn't mention anything about
doesn't that. Mention Larry Nichols?
No.
That?
He said sooth. He also doesn't bring up his whole cosmology about pedophile blackmail or anything like that. It's just some sort
it's
of...
It's just regular old
it's
blackmail.
It's just nebulous ideas of blackmail. He screams about how Supreme Court Justice nominee Sotomayor is a racist. He goes on some of that.
You know what? She's actually done a really great job. Like when you, whenever I remember her confirmation and reading up on her, and the consensus at the time was very much like, well, she's more of a centrist liberal, like center left kind of judge. And since then, if you read her decisions, she's been pretty hard towards the left.
Mm-hmm.
I like her.
Cool.
I like Sotomayor.
Well, someone who Alex likes.
I give her my retroactive endorsement.
Someone who Alex gives an endorsement to now.
Great.
Is a guy by the name of Eric Prince. Who runs Blackwater.
No!
Or ran Blackwater, which has now changed its name a number of times.
Great episode of The Dollop?
Yeah. Alex now calls him a great patriot and a hero because he's involved with a lot of Trump's shady dealings and is deeply involved with Trump. Let's hear what he was saying about Blackwater back in 2009.
Cold-blooded murdering thugs.
Yep.
That's the same thing that Blackwater Worldwide's doing all over the planet right now. They work for the people that are bringing down this country.
What the fuck? The fuck?
No, he's nailed it.
Right. But how
they still work for those very same people.
How do you go from there to abandoning that?
Well, Trump got elected.
Well, yeah, of course.
See, it's very simple.
That's
every single conservative principle that has ever been held has been demolished by Trump. Absolutely.
It's very interesting, though, that it applies to Alex Jones's conspiracy world just as equally.
Yeah.
You know, the idea.
Exactly.
The idea that he's selling a pretty accurate picture that Blackwater are murdering thugs and death merchants.
Pretty much.
And then I just conveniently forget that the same guy who ran that is now someone who I yell about it being a great patriot.
Well, he doesn't run it anymore. He probably left due to morality concerns.
Right. Yeah.
That was
probably.
Something that if I know anything about Eric Prince, it's that morality is high on his list.
Right. Right. And so it's weird. It's you see these inconsistencies, and certainly there's a ton of them. But one thing that is pretty consistent through Alex Jones's early career that we're finding is weird commercials.
Okay.
So we love, of course, anytime we get to hear a new country song from Diamond Gusset.
Absolutely.
I
want to know where to hide my guns pre-2015.
This won't top those, but boy, it's weird.
Summer's coming, and now's the time to learn self-sufficiency. If you're going to eat from nature's bounty of wild edible plants, remember, there's a learning curve. Experience is the best teacher, but that means time. To speed it up, you'll need to build on the wisdom of a teacher who has lived it. Author Linda Runyon is that teacher. Her Wild Food Knowledge Package is the crash course. The DVD gives you a 3-hour overview of her world directly from her. The book gives you an in-depth reference with all of the insider know-how you'll ever need. And her wild cards are your portable summary and cheat sheet for your field work.
Wait for
this 3-pronged learning system will take you from spectator to scholar to gourmet survivalist in weeks, not years. Folks, I can vouch that Linda's the real deal. She's my mom, and I watched her do it. So go to upthefield.com or call 888-51-EAT-FREE. Start now. Knowledge is power. Better take action. I think a storm's coming.
better?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes. Yes to all of that. I want that book now.
I could vouch for her. She's my mom.
She's
great.
My mom.
Wild. And then that end there where it's like, better take action. There's a storm coming. And then long thunderstorm sound. Very weird.
Too long. Too long.
Very uncomfortable.
Too long was that thunderstorm.
Can't come up with enough copy to fill this 30-second spot. Better have a thunderstorm sound effect. Yikes.
Tell me more about a gourmet survivalist.
Well, you know, you got to get some leeks and ramps. You got to get some of those great mushrooms that you can find in nature.
Right. Well, but a lot of those are poisonous.
That's why you need that book.
Admittedly, the greatest teacher is experience, which I feel like they should not be selling on their ad for. Don't eat this bullshit.
If you have enough time, you don't need this.
Yeah, exactly.
But time is short. There's a storm coming. So. We know that one of Alex Jones's consistent principles throughout his life has been opposition to abortion, except for the 10 that he got when he was younger.
Right.
And in this next clip, he discusses the shooting of an abortion doctor.
Oh, I remember this one.
And this is fucked up.
Hey, domestic white terrorism never happens.
This is super weird, the spin he takes on it, and the historical comparison he decides to make.
Okay.
Now, that said, remember John Brown, who in Kansas, they've got no fewer than 14 statues? I looked it up this morning at the State House, you name it. John Brown, the abolitionist, killed a whole bunch of people, slave owners.
Well.
He massacred 9 in Kansas, 9 slave owners, killed them dead in a hammer, shot them through, then led an army of white abolitionists and blacks on an armory in another state.
Or just abolitionists.
And the state honors him for assaulting the military and police and killing them. And they got statues for him all over Kansas. Now, I'm not defending John Brown. Abraham Lincoln, you know, said that he was a misguided soul.
I don't think he was.
But you got to ask why state houses and why county seats all over the country and why black community centers all over the country have statues to John Brown, who went around killing white slave owners.
Hold on.
Now, are those blacks human beings? Yes, they are. Are those babies human beings? See, this is the warped situation. If we win and defeat the New World Order and stop the killing, 50-plus million babies, is that enough? Will there be statues to this guy?
Whoa.
I'm only asking the question.
I'm going to go with no.
I don't think
it's a very easy question.
People should go around killing abortionists.
Don't
because
you?
It'll make them into victims, and that's the only
you
way they're going
to
be able
to
continue peddling their trade.
Yikes! Yikes!
Weird outro music.
Yeah, that logic.
Weird outro music
is insane.
Well, I mean, when you consider how many statues are for slave owners,
mm-hmm.
I'm way on board with statues for slave murderers.
Sure.
Not slave, just slave owner murderers, not.
Right.
Slave owners were slave murderers.
I think everyone understood what you were saying. I think that when you really take a step back and look at, what is going on here, what you see is that the guy who shot an abortion doctor is not doing that because he's motivated by the plight of the unborn.
I really don't think so.
They're usually doing it because they're threatened by the idea of women's autonomy and want to commit terrorist acts in order to scare people out of being abortion
doctors.
Oh,
do you mean all anti-abortion people?
But yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you know, what you're doing is when you kill an abortion doctor is you are trying to reinforce a status quo that is not equitable. In fact, I would suggest that what you are is the equivalent of the slave owner in the metaphor. So you're killing an abolitionist is what you're doing.
What I would say is
right
in the same vein. If you kill Jeff Bezos, I will make a statue for you.
You can make a statue?
If somebody kills Jeff Bezos, I'll learn.
Okay.
God damn.
You're crafty. So,
yes, I am crafty.
So that's fucked up. I thought that was really disturbing, by and large. But the thing that I thought was even more disturbing is that back in 2009. Go ahead.
He's comparing. Like, to a certain extent, I kind of understand from if you are taking his standpoint in good faith, the idea that an abortion doctor, because unborn children are people,
right,
then that's a murderer. Right. If you believe that, if you truly believe that, I can understand why somebody murdering a murderer to you,
right,
a state sanctioned murderer, is a positive moral act.
Yeah.
But no.
Well, but
I'm going to go with a hard no on that one.
The other problem that I have with that is the title "abortion doctor" is silly, because that's suggesting that there are people. Or like this guy who got killed is just like, all day I abort. That's all I do, baby.
Can you get a specialty in med school of just abortions?
I mean,
you don't have to learn about any diseases. You just have to learn about murdering.
Maybe.
In their words, babies.
I don't know. I don't think so. But, listen, we got to move along. We had a lot of road to cover here.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm derailing this whole thing.
This next clip is super wild.
Uh-huh.
Because back in 2009, Alex Jones's callers were either pitching their own stuff or calling him out for things. And in 2009, Alex Jones can handle criticism.
Okay.
Listen to this guy call in.
He sucks it up?
Kind of. I mean, it's not good, but okay. He doesn't get mad.
So I find you extremely difficult to believe most of what you say at this point.
Then why are you still
bird
listening?
Flu thing, you blew completely out of proportion. You said you were losing touch with your ability to think a couple of weeks ago. I think you should admit you're a right winger for one and quit saying you're trying to break the left-right paradigm. Hello?
Not listening to you.
Okay, and this guy called in Friday to your show. Jason was the host, but Jason was real trite with the guy. The guy was going to disagree, and he was going to say that you guys are, picking on Obama a whole lot more than Bush, which I totally agree with that.
Good call.
And I want to back that guy up, but Jason wouldn't listen to the guy. He just got really trite, really smart-alecky with him. And the guy ended up just kind of hanging up during the break and never got any points out. But I would say that we're being bombarded with Obama being the tip of the spear. Bush wasn't the tip of the spear. He was kind of like a good old boy who you kind of liked underneath. You know, you're kind of like
if you kill him, you get a statue, too.
I want to say that mining gold causes mercury poisoning. Are you familiar with this?
I know that. I know there's a lot of mining that has bad byproducts.
The two deepest mines in the world, gold mines, are in South Africa.
I'm not sure where he's going with this.
What is happening?
There was like 177 blacks fried in a gold mine in South Africa. And
sir, I appreciate your call. Sir, listen, I gave you about 2 minutes to run on there and say I'm a right winger. I'm not a right winger or a left winger.
So I disagree with you, but doesn't get mad at him. He lets him speak his piece.
I also feel like midnight in the garden of good evil is trite. I feel like that's
everything
troublesome. We haven't seen it yet, but I'm guessing there'll be a musical about Hamilton. That's trite. That's
trite
super trite.
Fuck. I mean, that is an unheard of amount of time for criticism to be allowed on the air these days.
Oh,
And even if Alex Jones did let someone say that many, pretty critical negative words about him, and accurate, you're way more against Obama than you were against Bush.
Oh, 100%.
That sort of thing. He would come back from it and start fucking screaming at him.
Oh, of course.
Just he has that commercial even plays where he screams at that Frank guy. Frank, I need your help, Frank!
Right.
That he always makes jokes about.
The first thing that he would say in response to this now is I understand your criticism. I'm not saying it that I'm treating him differently because he's black. And you'd be like, he didn't point that out.
He'd create a straw man version of the complaint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to some extent, he still is because he's claiming that he's not a right winger, which, I mean, his soul lives on the right.
Super hard.
So at the end of this episode,
his soul lives on the white, Dan.
At the end of this episode, we get a delightful appearance from one Jesse Ventura.
Hey!
Jesse Ventura comes in and they have a nice time having a chat. Jesse is smart. He's making independent-minded opinions, and people keep bringing up points, and he's just like, well, how would you do that? He was talking about dumb policy ideas. And he's like, well, logistically, what do you think that would look like? And people have no answer. It's amazing.
I love Jesse Ventura every time he shows up on the show.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
With the exception of that, like Chris Kyle saga, I've liked everything, every one of
his
appearances.
That's a good point.
He gets Alex to, admit that he supports the opening up of Cuba.
Right.
Back in 2009, Alex was for the idea of opening up Cuba.
He was against it when it happened.
And then they talk a bunch about how Mancow had recently done a publicity stunt where he allowed himself to be waterboarded.
Mancow is a piece of shit!
No, he doesn't really say that. I think he's kind of on board with Mancow. But they talk about how Mancow had been... do you remember this? He got waterboarded as a publicity stunt?
I do remember that, and he lasted like 2 seconds and was like, no, this is fucking torture!
This is bullshit!
Oh, fuck!
Yeah.
Oh, shit! All the things that I believed for a long time aren't true!
Right, right. And so they talk a bit about that, and Jesse Ventura's like, of course it is. That's what they're like. I don't need to do that to know that. It's pretty nonsensical. A lot of it's not really even worth listening to, but there's one clip that I think elevates to the level of greatness where we learn something very important about Alex.
Okay.
I tell you, surfing's very addictive, isn't it, Jesse?
Yes, it is, and it's very difficult, and people don't realize that it's a life dedication, and I love to say this. If people were that dedicated to a religion, would they call them religious bums?
I'm as brown as a coconut from the beach. I love the beach itself. We'll be right back.
Yes! That's a top 10 throw
there
to break.
There you go. There you go.
That is a top 10 throw to break.
Solid.
I'm as brown as a coconut from the beach. I love the beach itself. We'll be right back.
Pre-show, we were talking to A.C. Slater, and that is an A.C. Slater move
there. No doubt. That's Lopezian.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. That's very fun. And that brings us to the end of June 1st.
Oh.
Now we go to June 2nd. And it's a lot of hot garbage. There's not a lot going
on. Alex, I'm still on hold.
He starts the show off with an interview with Mancow, about this publicity stunt that he had done. And, Alex is like, I think I should get waterboarded, see how long I can make it. And like, you're just trying to get a runoff publicity stunt out of this.
Yeah.
It's not worth listening to at all.
Also, you're too much of a weakling to
probably
last do it.
10 seconds.
Oh, no.
Two seconds?
Wouldn't do it.
Yeah, probably
not. He's afraid. Also, because he's seen Mancow fail so miserably at it, he has to realize, I'm probably going to fail too. And if I fail super fast, I'm fucked.
And Alex's stated position at this point is already that it's torture. So
he has
nothing to really prove about it other than, yup.
Yeah.
Which he could just say based on Mancow's video. But anyway, Mancow's on and it's not worth listening to at all, except for this small clip.
Eric Mancow Muller, syndicated radio talk show host.
Sally.
That's right, Sally. We decided to start calling him Sally.
You know, I like when you spank me and call me Sally.
Fake
man, you are something else. I was saying, should I call you Eric Mancow Muller? And you said, call me whatever I want. And I said,
Sally,
okay, I'll call you Sally. And
Sally.
Now your new name will be Sally.
Whatever. How are you, Alex?
I was about to say something really horrible.
You trouble.
What was he going to say? He doesn't say. He never says. So, Eric Mancow, I wish I would have heard this before I was on Mancow, and I just could have called him Sally the whole time.
That would have been great.
God damn it, he sucks. But the rest of the interview is
he's the worst piece of shit.
The rest of the interview is just him talking about his waterboarding, and who cares.
Right.
A little bit later, he gets a visit from a guy named Mike Rivero, who does a show called What Happened With, I believe is the name of it. It's another show.
Bad title.
It's another show on the GCN radio network, Genesis Communications network.
What about stuff?
He got kicked off the radio network.
Too much happened.
He got kicked off. Let me find, I gotta pull, vamp for a second here, because I gotta find the exact quote.
Vamp for a second. Coming up next month in May, I will be at Zany's all month, 6 nights a week.
This is not what I meant by vamping.
I'll Zany's downtown Chicago.
It's terrible.
I'm not vamping. I'm not going to vamp for you.
It's terrible.
What
vamping.
What do you want me to do? A Jesse Ventura impression? I've already failed miserably at that.
Couldn't hurt. So he was a host on the Genesis Communications Network. The show is called What Really Happened with Mark Rivero. He was a host until about 2010 when he left, according to him, because he and Alex Jones did not see eye to eye on Israel.
So what really happened, Dan?
Mike is staunchly anti-Israel and felt that Alex was becoming more and more pro-Israel as time went on. His statement about moving his show off the Genesis Communications Network included the following, quote, GCN is a reflection of Alex Jones's views on the world, and more our points of view regarding Israel are diverging. I guess the breaking point was his rant in which he said that anyone who is a critic of Israel is a weak-minded fool. So he's a guy who, that's in his future at this point when he's on the show. At this point, they're still buddies, what have you. But, they have a breaking point over, relative levels of support for Israel.
Which is, where are we at now with Alex's support of Israel? He's pro-Israel.
Yeah, but I think it's more, he couches
but like in a vague way, right?
He couches it more as like they're one of the only nationalistic countries left. In the same way he supports Russia because he views them as one of the only nationalistic countries left.
Okay.
So he has sort of like this.
So he's a big fan of governments that murder people for no good reason.
Mysteriously, that seems to be all the anti-globalist countries.
It really seems to be nice. Like the guy who
Philippines.
Has he said anything about the guy who was elected in Hungary?
No.
Oh.
He avoids any of that sort of conversation.
Yeah, I would too if I were Alex.
So anyway, Mike Rivero's on, and it's a boring interview, but he does say one thing that I think is worth noting, and it's kind of, whew, Alex would never allow something like this on the show now, I don't think.
Every major war was ultimately lost by the country that started it. So guess where that sets us up? I'm not surprised our soldiers are committing suicide in such numbers. They know they're the bad guys.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow, is that intense.
I don't think Alex would allow someone to say something like that about soldiers now. I think he's so pro-military and pro-cop now that he wouldn't allow that sort of shit. At this point in 2009, he's...
And not because it's wrong.
No.
Not because historically that's the dumbest shit you can say.
If you looked at every single war that's ever been fought and tried to figure out, did the aggressor win or lose...
Well, you have to, because he said major war, which means he's classifying the wars that he thinks are major and all other wars. Like, what?
World War One?
Right. No, I get. He's talking about what? Three wars?
Maybe. I don't know.
Is he classifying the Korean War and the Vietnam War as major wars?
It's a police action. I don't know, but I do think that it's a sort of distasteful thing to say that of course these soldiers killed themselves. They know they're the bad guys.
Eh.
Even from my position, I think that's not a good thing to, like, that's not a good position to hold.
I don't know. What? No. Hold on. Before I get into any trouble for my position, it's just, I don't think it's because they know they're the bad guys. I think
there's a different way to phrase a similar sentiment in terms of like PTSD and grief and guilt about things you're made to do or made
survivor's
to
guilt. Your friend died, and so you feel like you should have been there to save him.
Right, because like, in this position, the way he's presenting it is like, good, kill yourselves. You're the bad guys.
Yeah, he's Westboro Baptist Church.
That's ugly. And this is kind of ugly, too. This next clip, I think Alex is expressing an opinion that it's pretty cool to kill cops.
Okay.
Or, I mean, I'm not saying my generation, or even if it's beyond my generation, isn't going to have to make sacrifices. If you're going to have a revolution, if you need...
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. People are going to try to CPS people's kids, and it's happening more and more. I see it in the news every week. And people are just going to kill them. And cops are going to stop people at a checkpoint, and the citizens are just going to get out. And it's already starting to happen. And the media kind of keeps it quiet. But you see the reports all the time. It's usually old vets, Korean War, Vietnam. Most of them are dead now, but they've had a couple cases in Austin where World War II vets would get pulled over and harassed by cops in Hays County. And the old vet would just get out and kill them. You know, it's like, buddy, I'm not your slave. This isn't Nazi Germany. You're dead. And, you know, the cop can argue about that all day and have the media say the old man was bad. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of blood, and the system knows that. And, you know, look, if we're self-sufficient, They can't beat us. That's why they want to shut down the farms and ranches and get control.
That's very weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's too far for me.
That's justifying murdering cops.
Bananas.
At, like, DUI checkpoints.
Oh, no. These are white people murdering cops.
Right.
So it's
that,
fine.
That should be important.
It's fine.
I mean, that is...
Let's point out, these are 100% white people murdering cops in Alex's worldview.
See, now we gotta skip right ahead to the third. That's it for the second. The third is where we're gonna focus...
The third is where we get the whitest.
The third is where we're gonna focus most of our attention. No, this is a refutation of what you're saying. Now, Alex says something about the cops negatively to start out the third.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, I don't like the way he keeps saying blacks in this clip.
Not good.
But listen to the spirit of this clip and think about what you were just saying.
Listening to one of the local talk stations, and a caller calls in and talks about how blacks continue to be killed, shot in the back. Homeless blacks, retarded blacks, autistic blacks.
You can stop.
In their cars at night. And there's always an excuse for why it happens. And the squad car videos always malfunction. And then we always find out, oh, it didn't malfunction. There is a surveillance camera. And then they say, oh, but he had a gun. Then you read the news article closely. At the bottom it says, no, officers thought he reached for a gun. Just deception.
Look at that. Look at that. Look at that position.
Holy shit!
Look at that position that Alex
holds. Jones has been kneeling for the national anthem this whole fucking time.
I mean, in 2009, he has a position of the cops are trying to cover up murdering black people, pretending that they have guns, which is an accurate depiction of...
I mean,
there was just the other day that guy in Brooklyn with a shower head.
I don't know how to deal with this.
It's very, very weird.
He's dead on.
Right. Now,
he's dead on. Like, not even wrong.
Except for some of the language is uncomfortable.
It's not great. It's not great, but his sentiment is there.
Right, which we can appreciate.
It's not even like we normally agree with him where he's right in the wrong way. Like, he's dead on.
Mm-hmm.
This is 100% accurate. Cops are murdering black people, and they are covering it up, and that's something that needs to stop.
Yep. It was a problem in 2009. It's still a problem, but Alex has changed his tune.
It was a problem in fucking 1860. Right.
Alex has changed his tune aggressively since then, and now has his aggressively pro-military and pro-cop positions, and I think that's because he's been... told perhaps that that's his big audience base or whatever. But
well, is it that, or does it really just come down to team sports?
I don't know.
Like, was it possible for the right wing to also at this time be like, hey, cops shouldn't be killing people, and then it became a thing where a black person talked about it and they can't abide by that?
I mean, it's possible. One of the things that I hope to track as we go forward in 2009, I have a subtle reason for why. It's not subtle. I have a bigger reason for why I'm doing this. But one of the other reasons is I want to figure out, like, his trajectory as it relates to, like, at this point being very anti-military and anti-cop.
Yeah.
And seeing where that changes. I think it's because of Obama.
Of course it is.
I think it's just because Obama's president and he thinks that all of them are tools of Obama's machinations and what have you.
Right.
But
right.
I don't know if that's the case. So I'm going to follow that moving forward.
So if I understand correctly, kind of what your point of view is on this one is that maybe the reason that he's against the military and the cops right now is because ultimately he believes it's headed by a black person.
Maybe.
And when it becomes headed by a white person, it's fine.
I don't think it's that simple, but I don't know if that plays into it. I don't know if we'll ever be able to answer that question either.
We've already answered that he's a racist.
Right.
So.
Right. No doubt. But I don't know if he could even answer that question, frankly.
That's a good point.
But I know that, like, one of the things that fascinates me the most is, like, things that are different. You know, like, Blackwater, he was against it in 2009, loves Eric Prince now.
Yeah.
That's easy to explain. It's Trump.
Right.
It's Trump-related. That's simple. But that's a huge giving up of your principles. In this case, I'm very fascinated in where did the pivot go of, like, cops are evil, they're supporting a terrible system, to... I love cops. Sometimes you got a bad one, but it's very rare.
Right.
That sort of rhetoric. I don't know, and we'll see. But he goes on to talk about another caller.
Speaking of which, a thought that just popped into my mind as far as Alex talking about right now. In 2009, how many abortions do you think Trump has paid for?
No idea. Hold on to that thought, though.
A lot?
Hold on to that thought.
A bunch.
We got to get through this next clip first.
Perhaps a barrel, even.
A grip of them.
Yes.
In this next clip, he goes on talking more about this radio show he was listening to.
Yeah.
Where it is talking about these African-Americans who have been shot by the police.
Uh-huh.
He talks about a caller, and I think that she's just a racist, but he has a different,
all right,
he has a different position on her.
Strange.
You see, these good old boys think they're part of the system. They think they're the winners. They think they're protected from all of this. And then I heard a woman calling right after them going, yeah, I think we got too many minorities. And she was serious. She said, I'm glad they're killing them. You see, that stupid fat soccer mom thinks she's part of the establishment. She's a eugenicist.
What?
You can run into them. I get their emails and their calls, and I've had them snidely say stuff to me. You know, if you go to a school function or something, they say, well, there are too many people, Alex. Well, listen here, know-it-all control freak. Kill yourself then.
Okay.
Don't sit there in the minority neighborhoods and tell 17-year-old pregnant girls, if you'll have an abortion, we'll drop this marijuana charge on you. And that's what goes on coast to coast.
That doesn't track.
Coast to coast.
I don't understand.
That was all just buzz marketing for coast to coast AM.
Where's this start? Where's the start point and where's his end point and how do they get there?
No idea. I don't know what he's talking about there at the end, but I do know that what he's describing is just a racist caller on an AM talk show, probably.
Right. And she's like, a eugenicist.
She's a eugenicist. She's part of it. She thinks she's a part of this imagined system that I'm afraid of because that
short leash.
That is still in place in 2009.
Right.
That part of his cosmology has existed throughout this entirety. So in the same way that I'm interested in things that are different, I'm also very interested in things that are the same. And this idea that there's this eugenicist plan by the elites and stuff, that's consistent.
But this is almost a cover story, I think, now. Because the concept that he's putting forth here is that the globalists are trying to divide us through race.
Right.
Right? That's his idea there.
He does.
I think, if I understand correctly.
There is a bit of that, yeah.
So now he says the same thing, but he's dividing us by race. So he's kind of got that consistent lie going on, but like he just stopped talking about it or explaining it like he seems passionate whenever he's describing her as being a globalist eugenicist.
Well, cuz he sees,
like, he seems like he cares about it in the way that he doesn't now.
But it's also because he sees his imagined enemies everywhere. You know, the same way that he talks about, like, being at the grocery store and someone's face turns into a demon and what have you and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, but that happens.
Yeah, of course.
Like, what was he? What was he, in an Aldi?
Look, I was at a Mariano's
the
other day.
That's actually kind of classist.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I went Mariano's.
Mariano's is a way better go. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's very weird. But the thing that I think is interesting, too, is if you listen to that clip, that, like, oh, you want other people to die? Why don't you kill yourself first?
That's fun. That sounds like a thing I would say.
That's the open, what we just listened to is the open mic version of the bit that he did on air like the other day in 2018 where he's screaming about like, kill yourself, I curse you, and shit like that. He's
right.
Just, when he's
right, fleshed, he's tooling up the bit.
He's fleshed out the bit and now he has the showcase version in 2018.
Right.
We get to see the
That's too long for a bit.
It's quite a while.
I would let that bit go.
Yeah.
I would have let that bit go.
So you asked a second ago, how many abortions do you think Trump has paid for? And I don't know. I can't answer that. But I do know that Alex in 2018.
20 plus, right?
In 2018, Alex has said that he has paid for at least 10. So we do know that, which is interesting to hear this in 2009.
And I'll tell you this, the citizens are out of control. The society's out of control. When you've got 50-plus million dead babies because people kill their own kids, their own future, their own treasure, because they're too lazy to use contraception, and because they're too lazy to admit it's a baby, that's out of control. And even if you don't believe in God and karma or you reap what you sow, you better believe in the law of the universe.
Okay. So, I mean, like, what the... I mean, what are you going to do? You know?
This is every Catholic priest.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
This is denying other people morality whilst you do as I say, not as I do.
Right. It's just interesting that at this point in his career, he's not ready to open up in the same way that he is now.
Because he doesn't have as much power as he does now.
Probably.
I'm sure he feels a lot less touchable.
That's true. And yeah. I think if he were to, in the middle of that rant where he's judging people for being too lazy to use contraception, right. If he were to say, I'm guilty, I've had 10 abortions, then I think that would have really hurt him in 2009. Whereas now, I mean, people just laugh at
it. I mean, in 2009, I give him, what, 6? I would say in the intervening 9 years, he's paid for at least 4 more.
No, because in 2009, he's married to Kelly. Like, he's...
Yeah, Dan.
They had 3 kids together?
Yeah, but they weren't fucking illegitimate kids.
No, I understand that, but I think at that point, he's married and he's settled down. I would say that all of the abortions that he has had, whether or not that number is exaggerated, were in his younger years.
At most, I will give you 8 at this time and 2 in the intervening 9 years.
I'd say 10 before, zero after.
And you'll be taking bets also in the bracket.
Yes, there will that's be. For sure. We got some prop bets going.
Surprise winner, Alex has had 10 abortions before being married the first time.
We're going to have just an elaborate book, a gambling book on this about Alex Jones's conception record.
You can bet on anything in Britain.
So, Jordan, in the same way that Alex probably would have been hurt by that information in 2009, whereas he's not hurt by it now.
Yes.
There's another difference in 2009 that's very interesting that I could not have imagined.
Was he thinner?
No. There's no video of this. I'm just listening to audio.
All right.
But maybe he was a little bit. I don't know.
I don't know.
Just asking. Back then, one of his sponsors is soap, Cal-Ben Soaps.
I really was hoping you would just full stop soap.
The soap industry?
Just soap.
Cal-Ben Soap or...
Cal-Ben Soap?
Cal-Ben, I think.
Cal-Ben.
5-star soaps.
All right. Eventually, he went on to leave the soap industry and go with ice cream with his friend... Cal Jerry.
Just to the chat room, they're asking why I think he hasn't had abortions since he got married. I guess there is a little bit of I don't even know what you'd call it, purity bias on my part. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think that given that they had 3
you
kids...
You still believe in love.
Maybe.
That's kind of what you believe in, Dan.
I don't know. But at
That's
the same
cute.
Time...
That's a very cute thought.
At the same time, at no point am I saying this in any judgmental way. Like
I'm not being judgmental at all.
Right. I'll admit my slight bias there.
I've paid for 46 abortions.
Oh boy.
That's 4 more than the answer to the question of what is life, the universe, and everything.
Back to soap. So, Alex has a soap sponsor.
Yes.
And in order to have him be a sponsor of the show, Alex makes clear that part of the deal is that the owner of the soap company gets to be a guest on his show once a month.
All right. I want to know the owner of this soap company.
Well, you're going to get to
listen
to
this? What does this soap company owner believe?
Well, here's Alex trying to get into this guest appearance, I guess.
This is the only soap to defend against 9/11.
You know, side issue, but I want to get into the soap, but it all ties into that. Governments, Hitler was into mind war, eugenics war.
Okay.
It all ties into the soap.
I want to get into the soap.
The government is out of control. It all ties into the soap, though.
I want to get into the soap, but this is all related. Let me talk to you about Hitler.
How do you get to the bottom of the story? You follow the soap.
Absolutely. That's number one rule
number
of journalism.
One rule.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So he tries to get into some of his narratives with the soap guy, and it doesn't work all.
Here we go.
It doesn't work that well.
Let's see it.
Eugenics. I mean, I see the chemicalization of everything part of the eugenics. I know it is. Have you ever looked into Margaret Sanger and the Colgate Foundation and all of that?
No.
Yeah, it's It's pretty hardcore. Well, regardless, tell us what on record the detergents and toxic soaps are doing to us.
I fucking love...
This is sad.
No. All right, well, tell us about soap, then.
Tell us about what's wrong with detergent. So they have a little talk about detergent.
Oh, please more. And this, please more of that.
This guy is like, hey, you know, they put, they talk about, sodium chloride being in soap. And everybody's like, oh, what is this chemical? It's table salt. And they use it as just a filler. We don't use it as a filler. It's all a fucking ad for his soap.
Yeah, of course it is.
And it gets to this.
If you give a hard no to that question, you're out.
It gets to this.
Our guarantee is satisfaction guaranteed. Or double your dirt back.
Explain some of the chemicals that are in the soaps and hair care products and all the crud people use. I know I washed my hair after lifting weights this morning with Calbin shampoo.
Good on air read. That is smooth.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Silky smooth.
I know I washed my hair this morning after lifting weights because I'm a strong man.
Because I'm swole.
With Calbin shampoo.
He does do that little pause and the just put some English on it. It's gorgeous.
So good. God, I want this Alex back.
This is a sad
Alex, if you're listening, God damn it, come back to this.
This is a sad Alex because what you're seeing is, a guy who has to allow this in order to be sponsored. You know, like, I want sponsors badly in terms of allowing us to continue doing this without me needing to have
How's
a
Calbin
job.
Doing?
I'll give him a call.
Yeah.
But
fuck
I would never. I would never.
Ben, talk about your time working for the Alex Jones Show. No.
I would never accept that as a stipulation of sponsorship. And it's clear, Alex does make clear that part of the sponsorship is he's on once a month.
Yeah.
He doesn't
of course.
Seem happy about it.
Of course not.
This is a mic down clip. Listen to this is how the interview ends.
Okay.
Or 5starsoap.com or CalbinPureSoap.com. Marty, give me a quick limerick.
There was a young lady of Kent who said that she knew what it meant when men asked her to dine, gave her cocktails and wine. She knew what it meant, but she went.
Marty Schachter.
Even a fun limerick.
It was bad.
That was shit.
It was shit. But then there's so much fun there because you've got the long pause and then Alex, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
All right. Great stuff. Great stuff, kid. All right. Great stuff.
Give
me a quick limerick.
That's a fascinating glimpse into 2009 Alex.
I fucking love it.
He's being subjected to this in order to survive.
Give me a quick limerick is my favorite sentence Alex has ever said.
And it's clear, I mean, you could pick up from context clues that, like, that I gotta ask him for a limerick.
Yeah. No, he has to. Because that's what this guy is known for, improvising limericks off the top of his head.
And that-
he goes out to the bar, and everybody's like, oh, give us a limerick, you asshole.
And that's what he wants to do. He wants to go on air and do a limerick. He doesn't want to talk about
Margaret
Sanger.
No, he doesn't give a shit about soap either. He just wants to talk limericks on air.
Absolutely.
Love it.
So in 2009, something happened.
Larry Nichols, you would be back on the show if you did limericks.
If you just figured out a way to talk about how you're not a duck.
Just give me some limericks.
Something happened in 2009. About Alex. And
yeah.
It's one of the few times that, he's been shook.
Okay.
There's people who are making claims about him.
Uh-huh.
First of all, the people who attack him are shitheads. You need to know that.
That's a first start.
And, in this next clip, he gets into it in a way that he usually doesn't address public criticism, but this one, he has to.
A lot of these folks that attack me aren't just government operatives or just info agents. They didn't have great parents like I did. They didn't have the life experiences I did to bring me to the point I'm at.
I love this rock.
But I do have to answer some of the charges occasionally that I'm
going to get.
Eugenics News, the police state control grid coming up next hour.
Absolutely.
And over the phones up as well. Kept getting emails about this in the last few months, and I thought it was a joke, so I ignored it. But it seems to have picked up steam. And
I want you seriously to try and guess what he's talking about.
You know, I want to go with Israel or something like that, but I feel like that's not going to be the way. I want to go with...
It's something that he's deeming serious enough to address on air.
Right.
It's a criticism that for months people have been emailing him about.
Yeah, I'm, you know what? I am going to go with, that's not the best way to hide your guns.
Oh, that's interesting. That's not it.
And so I guess I might as well at least chime in on it. It just really gets ridiculous. And
hot
this is
dogs
the type
are
of
not
stuff
a
that
sandwich.
Discredits us. This is why mainstream people laugh when they hear you question the government.
One more.
I still
more
have
chance.
No idea.
One more chance.
Beef versus tofu.
Nope.
Because the media is smart. They focus in on the out and out kooks, the out and out nuts. The people that are just saying absolutely insane, ridiculous things.
They certainly are now.
The rest of us who are questioning the official government story, that's almost always a lie, or at least partially a lie. It's always spin, at least.
Fluoride?
Look stupid. They do this guilt by association. And, you know, none of us are perfect, so I try not to be judgmental.
Fair.
But there are tens of thousands of sites or pages that come up saying, I'm Bill Hicks.
Oh!
And people actually believe it.
I mean, big
websites have it up and have our pictures side by side and really say, I'm Bill Hicks. And, you know, it's almost crazy to come on air and say.
It is a little crazy.
I'm not Bill Hicks.
Cool.
And in a way, it only encourages it.
A little.
Just like to come on air and say, I'm not a Reptoid. Mm. Because people blow up videos of me where there's 2-point light in front of me and, you know, that puts the image of 2 lights on each side of my eye, so it makes it look like I have cat's eyes.
What?
Yeah. So no, that one makes sense.
So just before you respond to that, about a minute later, he makes an official statement.
But I'm not going to belabor it. I just need to answer it on record and say.
Are you Bill Hicks?
No, I'm 35 years old, and I was born in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and I am not Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks did not stage his death. That's a very mean thing to say.
True.
I've even talked to some of his family. You know, I know him. Bill really did die, folks.
I mean, I think it is a mean thing to say in terms of, like, Bill Hicks' own life.
Right.
Like, if you have any respect for Bill Hicks, it's an insult to say that he's Alex Jones now.
I mean, some of his later specials weren't that great.
No, that's definitely true. I mean, but it's the same thing with pretty much any comic.
Yeah.
So
except
that's...
for what? George Carlin? We go with George Carlin.
Some of those later stuff.
All right, good point. Good
some of
point.
Those middle specials good weren't great either. but look, dude, this is fascinating to me because he wouldn't fucking air this kind of shit now, or he would have come up with a better spin on it than just I'm not Bill Hicks.
Maybe that's his distraction now. Maybe he should go back to being like people still think I'm Bill Hicks.
No, he does that from time to time.
Yeah,
he has done that. Like he's gone back to the well as like. His satire pieces, where he'll play with that meme,
right? Which should be the easiest way to tell he's not Bill Hicks. Mm-hmm. His satire is garbage.
It's pretty bad. Has no grasp on what satire is.
Even at his worst, Bill Hicks was better at satire than Alex.
But it's wild, man. In 2009, he saw fit to make a big production out of saying like, "This is how they invalidate you."
Every time the mainstream media gets a hold of somebody questioning the government story on 9/11, they just keep calling him Bill Hicks.
Right.
Every single one of them.
And at the same time,
Glenn Beck.
I would say that
Bill Glenn Beck Hicks.
I would say that if he was Bill Hicks, kind of makes him more legitimate.
Yeah, you know, right?
If it was like, all right, look, I tried to play a little charade, but it's important to me, and I just didn't want my past work to be. Involved in my present work.
Right.
I created a new identity for myself.
Also, I faked my own death.
Sure.
That was a big part of that.
But that's not a big deal.
It's a weird thing to admit on air.
I don't think it's a crime. Might be a crime. Probably a tax crime.
Also, I was the plane hijacker.
D.B. Cooper?
D.B. Cooper.
Right. All of these things
are true. D. Bill Hicks Cooper.
So, now, at this point, we get to Alex Jones giving us a list of globalists. And that's interesting.
All right.
remember this story from a week or two ago, and ABC News reported it first, and said, yes, secret meeting of the world elite to carry out eugenics. But they said it's a good thing. Billionaire club and bid to curb overpopulation through a world government. And it has to be secret, they say, for your own good. And it's Bill Gates, it's David Rockefeller, it's Warren Buffett, it's Michael Bloomberg, it's Oprah Winfrey, Ted Turner, all the usual suspects. And they met at Rockefeller University president's private home.
So you got a list there, conspicuous in his absence, George Soros.
Also, Tina Turner.
Right, right.
Another conspicuous known globalist Tina Turner.
Sure.
How else do you get your hips to move?
What's nationalism got to do? Got to do with it? You know, I mean, this is probably the larger picture of what I'm most interested in looking back on these episodes.
It's when did George Soros
when did he come into play?
Yeah.
And you can see here, we already looked at that episode, from 2006 with Aaron Russo.
Right.
Talked about, all this shit. No mention of Soros.
No,
Endgame, his entire documentary about the globalist agenda and their plan for enslavement. No mention of Soros. And now here we are in 2009, and he's listing off globalists and no mention of Soros.
Right.
Now, I also want to be clear. I do know a little bit that I should just tell everyone ahead of time. I do know that in 2010, Glenn Beck does a two-part, two-night special about how George Soros is the puppet master. And it's one of the most anti-Semitic, nonsensical things that has ever been aired on television.
Yes, I recall that.
It got incredible blowback.
Yeah.
And my working theory, and we will see if this is the case.
Uh-huh.
I'm not entirely sure. But I'm suspicious that Alex Jones got on the Soros tip a little bit before that. And that's why he's pissed off at Glenn Beck.
You think so?
Yeah, that Glenn Beck ripped that off. And that kind of elevated Glenn Beck in those weird, crazy circles.
You know what? I'm actually going to go with the opposite. I'm going to go with this is our QAnon situation all over again.
Oh.
And he gets to Soros a little bit after Glenn Beck.
Interesting.
Because he sees Glenn Beck getting all this attention.
Right.
So then he jumps on Soros, and that's why he's pissed off at Glenn Beck, is because he doesn't get to take credit for it.
Either of these things are possible, and we'll see as it plays out, because neither of us know.
No, that's true.
We have hunches, and we'll see. So in this,
so far, mine have all been wrong, and yours tend to be right. So there we go.
I mean, it's just by virtue of the fact that I have a mind meld with this dumb asshole.
Yeah, I know. It's a very strange thing.
So in this next clip, Alex brings up one of his favorite sources about the transhumanist eugenics future. And it's just fun to listen to because it's so wrong. He's just making shit up. It's so fun.
Okay.
It's so fun to know for sure that even in 2009, he was just making shit up.
Okay.
You know, Bill Joy of Sun Microsystems, I always plug key things that are well known. There's thousands of things we could plug. April issue 2000 of Wired Magazine, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. And he said, I went to a top tech private conference with 200 top tech leaders, sworn to secrecy.
It's a TED talk.
So I can't say the names.
That's
this is the
true.
Guy worth $4 billion at that time. You know, owns
they
one of the biggest
fun bucks,
infrastructure
though.
Companies out there for IT, Sun Microsystems. And he says, it was very upsetting. It was how, do we kill everybody or do we just cull most of the people and
Alex
then let them be entertained by the new technocracy? And the elites leaning towards killing
everybody.
Alex is making that part up too.
And then he goes on to quote Theodore Kaczynski. Why did Kaczynski, this professor, this doctor, admitted LA Times reports CIA operative, he quits, runs to the bush, and starts bombing people for a decade, bombing key in people over key technocracies. I'm not defending what he did, but that's a real environmentalist. Kaczynski said, my God, they're planning to create a total grid, create a new species of humanoid. This is what the elites say they're doing, merging with cybernetics and getting rid of most of us. He said, I gotta go kill these people.
So real quick, Ted Kaczynski was crazy.
So did Alex just come on air and be like, The Unabomber had some good ideas, man. That's all I'm saying.
And then later,
He's the guy at the party you do not want to be anywhere near.
He's Drew Michaels' bit.
He's Drew Michaels' bit.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. It's not a bad bit.
So the couple things that I want to point out is that the quote in that article, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, from Ted Kaczynski.
Yes.
Is all Alex Jones read. Because all of the other stuff that he's talking about like the people, like, killing us off and stuff like
right.
that, the elites making a decision whether or not, that's all from the Ted Kaczynski quote in the article. He's taking that as being Bill Joy's position, which it is not. If you go to our website, knowledgefight.com, I have an entire big write-up that I've done on Bill Joy, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, and why Alex Jones is full of shit. You can find a link to the actual article. It's kind of long. But it's worth it. It's enjoyable. But it explains very
and the
thoroughly.
Annotated version of the Unabomber's
quote
manifesto?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Did you do the
no,
whole thing?
We just have the whole thing up there on our website.
that'd be a thing that I might do.
So this the
for my next blog post, I'm just gonna put up Ted Kaczynski's Unabomber manifesto.
Wouldn't put it past you.
And be like,
Question mark.
Exactly.
Shrugging emoticon. this next clip is weird. I think it matches up with some of Alex's ideas in the present.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know where he's getting any of this information from. And
right.
it's super fucked up. And also a little bit,
when's Larry Nichols coming to play?
He's not around as
he's
far as I
know. He's not around?
Well,
no Steve Pachenik. No Roger Stone. We're going bare bones, Alex Jones making up shit whole cloth.
I mean, Ventura's around, but I mean, in terms of people we know in his world have been
right.
around for a long time.
And Bill Hicks is there.
I don't know. It's tough. I don't know. Those guys might be around. And I just haven't come into an episode with them yet.
Okay.
This clip, very weird and white.
They have social workers that ask them questions under this. Are mommy and daddy spanking you? Are they yelling at you? Because we've got a nice foster home, especially if you're blonde-haired and blue-eyed like this little girl. She better be careful. Because they can get half a mil for them. So, and people can't believe this is happening. I had a senator on a few weeks ago from Georgia where she was naming names of where there are bounties. We need this many blonde-haired, blue eyes this week.
I don't believe this.
And they got Walmart employees, everybody watching. You yell at your kid, boom, police are there, take them, they're gone, they get half a mil. Walmart gets a few grand out of it. And I showed you USA
Wait,
Today
what?
Where Walmart and pizza places and everybody run your criminal background when you pay with a credit card, and then you wonder why cops pull you over when you leave the parking lot. They've got the whole grid in place.
Wait, so does Walmart get the commission on the kidnapped kid?
No.
On the catching of the kidnapped
now,
kid.
See, I'm more curious about, does the employee or Walmart LLC?
Oh, Walmart LLC. Come
so
on. They
the
don't
business,
treat their work.
The
they don't treat their workers well at
right,
all.
Right.
Now, maybe the employee gets a little bit of a cash kickback, but come on, man.
This to me is like, this is just indicative.
Half a million and they only get a few thousand dollars. That's a bad negotiating tactic.
That's a bad finder's fee.
Yeah, absolutely.
This to me is like the perfect encapsulation of the Alex Jones narratives you don't need to look into.
I can't see why.
Well, there's a lot that I like to research, and this is not the kind of thing I like to research, because I just smell it, and I'm like, nah.
See, this is
because
the type of thing I want to research. Is
go
because
for it.
I really want to find out.
Enjoy.
Like, my main goal is to find out that Walmart does get a finder's fee.
Well, because, if there was a senator who was making these claims.
Did he have a senator from Georgia on there?
I didn't listen to the week before this. I might
why
have to go
would
back
you,
and...
Why would you say that you have a senator from Georgia and not say the name?
He lies a lot. You
Fair.
Should remember that. Even in 2009, he's lying
Fair.
A lot.
Fair.
But like, if a senator was making these sorts of allegations, they'd at least get looked into. And it would be pretty easy to figure out a paper trail of kidnapped kids kickback to Walmart.
Well, yeah.
And
are they getting paid by a check?
Let's be
it seems easy to catch that.
Fucking clear that Walmart is a $1 billion company. They don't give a fuck about $2,000 for helping kidnap children.
When you got such a low overhead on children kidnapping, that's pure profit, Dan.
So ridiculous.
It all adds up.
So Absolutely ridiculous.
Look, you build your empire on the small things, Dan.
Well, I think what you really come down to,
and that by that I mean kids.
Alex resents the idea of child protective services, which to me is like, I don't know why you don't want abused children to have resources at their disposal.
Because he does all of the things that the CPS says you shouldn't do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he puts his son on air making spurious accusations.
Not great.
Aggressive and violent gun rights debate in 2018.
That's certainly true. He's the person who says...
He has his kids involved in a transphobic satire video.
Right, that's not great.
At one point.
I'm sure he spanks them very, very aggressively.
It's possible. I don't know. We can't make those sorts of claims.
He's just doing the version of the guy who's like, well, they hit me when I was a kid and I turned out fine.
Sure, sure.
And your answer to that should be like, well, some of you turn out to be Alex Jones, so maybe fucking figure it out.
But the thing, I mean, sure. But what I want to talk more about is the idea that, like, this Child Protective Service is evil or weird because they're asking kids who are, they come into their purview, are you okay?
Right.
I don't think that's an evil thing at all. I think that's them doing their job. The idea of, like, asking, does mommy hit you? Does daddy hit you?
Right.
That sort of thing is giving kids a chance to be saved from abuse. If Alex is against that because the sanctity of the family or whatever, I gotta say I 100% disagree with him.
Right.
But be that as it may.
What would you say?
What?
What would you say to a CPS social worker that asked you that question? Say you are eight or nine.
If I was a kid?
Yeah.
I'd say no.
Right?
Yeah.
I would say no too, and I got the shit kicked out of me.
Well, okay. Well, we have slightly different...
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, you were trained to say no, whereas...
That's a good way of putting it.
Whereas I've...
Spare the rod, spoil the child, my friend.
See, I've only realized that the spankings with a wooden spoon were bad as an adult.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that back then.
I agree. I would have said the same thing.
I wouldn't have articulated it back then. But be that as it may... That's my way of getting away from this uncomfortable territory.
Good call.
We have a guest.
Because how both of us are fucked up.
Yeah, we have a guest coming up on this June 3rd, 2009 episode.
Let's do it.
And this guest.
This guest.
Did you ever wonder how Alex Jones met Jesse Ventura?
No. Well, I just assumed that they fucking... you're right. I should have at least considered that. For some reason... Alex Jones knowing Jesse Ventura has made the most sense of anything that this show has ever done. It's just like, oh, they know each other.
Of course they're buddies.
Yeah, whatever. They were born in the same basket. Like, I don't know. No. I don't know how else to say it.
Today we find out how he met Jesse Ventura.
Okay.
Kinky Friedman's set to announce he's running for governor. At least that's what I heard from my producer. We'll see. He'll talk about it. That's coming up. Musician, best-selling author. That's how I met Jesse Ventura.
Kinky Friedman.
So, separately, I guess that's not how I met Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson, I ran into at a movie showing, and then he contacted us.
What do you know about Kinky Friedman?
I know the name. I used to know a lot more, but that's one of those things where no matter how much you forget about somebody, you're never going to forget the name Kinky Friedman.
Kinky Friedman is really cool. And he has no business being on Alex Jones's show.
All right.
Except that they're both Texans and kind of dudes.
That's all you need.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kinky Friedman before we get into the interview.
Let's do it. I want to know all about Kinky Friedman.
In the 1970s, Kinky Friedman was in a parody country band called Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys.
He's already my favorite artist of all time.
They played such songs as Get Your Biscuits in the Oven and Your Buns in the Bed.
Fantastic.
And his other
hit. Weird Al should figure shit out.
And his other hit, They Ain't Making Jews Like Jesus Anymore. He's Jewish.
Oh, I get it. I get that.
He's celebrating his country Judaism.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's a line.
No,
it's a weird line. But
not to profile.
Mm-hmm.
I guessed that Kinky Friedman was a Jew.
Yeah. So, he toured with Bob Dylan in 1976 on the Rolling Thunder Review Tour.
Right.
And he was the musical guest on an episode of Saturday
Night
Live.
They don't put Jesus' blood on the tracks like they used to.
No.
Yeah. I remember that tour.
He was a musical guest on an episode of Saturday Night Live in 1976 where the host was Steve Martin. How awesome is that? That's so cool.
That's super cool.
So after that, after his music career ran its course, he started writing mystery novels.
I wonder what happened.
He was actually super successful.
After his music, the part where after his music career ran its course, it's like, well, of course.
He played the Grand Ole Opry. I don't know if this is entirely true, but he claims to be the first full-blooded Jewish person who's ever played the Grand Ole Opry. And that's possibly true.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now I want to know more about Kinky Friedman.
He played Austin City
Limits.
Do
they have any books about him in my local library?
He wrote 15 of them.
All right, well, I'll read them.
Probably even more than that, because he after his musical career, he started writing mystery novels.
This is great.
And
I love Kinky Friedman.
They featured a detective named Kinky Friedman.
Yes! Yes!
Who had finished up a musical career.
It would only be better if the detective was named Angela Lansbury.
No.
That would be the only way it would be better.
That'd be a great twist.
That'd be a great twist.
Kinky Friedman was the character's name. He had been a musical guy in the South, and then he moved to New York, started solving crimes with the help of his cat.
Love it. I love this. I love this so much. Yeah.
Then, in 2006...
I love this so much.
He ran for governor of Texas.
Of course! Why wouldn't he?
He was hoping to follow in the wake of Jesse Ventura becoming governor of Minnesota in 1999, and Schwarzenegger becoming California's governor in 2003.
Kinky! I didn't see that coming!
Ventura and Kinky were good friends.
I love it.
Of his political ambition, he wrote, quote, "My platform is to remember that when they went out searching for Sam Houston to try and persuade him to be the governor, and he was the greatest governor this state has ever had."
Not true.
"Rumor has it that they found him drunk sleeping under a bridge with the Indians."
Like it?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that.
He sold shirts with his slogan, "Kinky 2006. Why the hell not?"
I love it. That's a great slogan.
He was an absolute showman. And on the campaign trail, he would say things like, quote, "If I win, the first thing I'll do is demand a recount." And he promised that if elected the first Jewish governor of Texas, he would reduce the speed limit to 54.95.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love this man.
He's so hilarious.
Holy shit.
He's so funny.
Oh, please don't tell me he's an anti-Semite. Let me believe this is great.
No, he from everything I can, I mean, there's...
Because every time there's somebody great on this show, it always winds up being he's the only... truly anti-Semitic Jew.
I think that there's a little bit of a, like, how much hay are you making out of your Judaism at the expense of Judaism?
Not enough.
And that's kind of like, that's not a question I can answer. I think he's hilarious.
On the list of things that I'm going to, care about really hard, how much hay Kinky Friedman made out of his Judaism? Way down there.
I've tried to find, like, horrible things about him, and I can't find all that much. If you accept that he had a band called Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys, you're fine.
Yeah.
So
can't go wrong.
So he ran this campaign, and it was really fun, full of witticisms and joie de vivre, but he ended up getting 12.6% of the vote, coming in fourth out of six candidates in the Texas governor race.
That's a lot more than I kind of thought he would have gotten.
Yeah. So although...
That's Ross Perot levels of crazy, awesome, fun lunacy.
Yeah. So although Kinky is a fun, ribald Texan, Alex should not like him.
Absolutely not.
Because Kinky is a very public about being friends with both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. He wrote in an article in Texas Monthly about Clinton, quote, "I was just minding my business one day 7 years ago, promoting my latest mystery novel at a book signing in Austin at Barnes & Noble."
That's the greatest sentence I've ever heard.
"I had just told the crowd that the reading and signing were free, but there would be a two-latte minimum. A guy came up to me and said, quote, 'Sign one for the president.' I didn't think the book was really going to Bill Clinton, so I signed one of my standard inscriptions, 'Yours in Christ,' or 'See you in hell,' and forgot about it."
A little bit less... fun.
"2 weeks later, the postmaster in Medina brought me an express envelope and said in an excited tone, 'Kinky, you've got a letter from the White Horse Saloon. You know that place in Nashville where they do all the line dancing?' I looked at the envelope. It did not say White Horse. It said White House. Inside the envelope was a letter from President Clinton, and at the bottom he had written, 'I have now read all your books. More, please. I really need the laughs.' And that was the beginning of a 3-year pen pal relationship, during which we discussed many things, from foreign affairs to more metaphysical matters." And then Bill Clinton invites him to the White House.
Tell me that Bill Clinton made foreign policy decisions based on Kinky Friedman's thoughts.
Maybe. I don't know. So then about Bush, quote, I first met George W. Bush about 4 years ago at the Texas Book Festival. At the time, he was just thinking about running for president, and I was just thinking about having another Chavez Regal. This guy's great.
I love this guy.
He's a good writer, too.
I love Kinky Friedman.
Yeah. In a flash of misguided inspiration, I had taken Larry McMurtry's unclaimed name tag and slapped it on. In a matter of...
This is great, too. Fuck Larry McMurtry!
In a matter of moments, people were coming up to me and telling me how much they admired my work. Not wanting to burst their bubble, and fairly hammered by then, I played along. You've done so much for Texas, Mr. McMurtry, one lady told me.
Love it.
Thank you kindly, I replied. The governor, having witnessed this little exchange, eyed
what
me...
was it? What was he? A lonesome dove? He was a lonesome dove. He was the river book.
I don't know all his work.
Walk Two Rivers or whatever it is.
So George W. Bush eyes him quizzically at that point.
Right.
Look, governor, I said, McMurtry's a shy little booger. He never. He'd never do.
Okay, keep going.
He'd never do this for himself. I'm just helping the old boy out with a little PR. George W. Bush laughed and whispered something to several of his aides, leading me to believe I was soon to be 86th from the affair. But nothing happened. I asked one of the aides what he'd said, and he told me the governor had said, I want that guy for my campaign manager.
I love this.
George W. Bush...
This is one of the few moments of pure joy I've ever experienced on this show.
George W. Bush invites him to come to the White House, which he does...
Of course.
And so discussing his friendship with George W. Bush and
he
Bill
tells
Clinton,
him about how Reagan got butt fucked. Yeah.
Discussing the friendships that he has with these two presidents. He says, quote, some might ask particularly in these days, how the president can afford to maintain such a lighthearted friendship. The answer is, particularly these days, everyone needs a laugh and everyone needs a friend. Also, as early as 2005, Kinky was saying in interviews that he did not believe that rifles should be allowed with magazines higher than 5. So, he's friends with two globalist presidents and believes in gun control. But because he's famous, Alex is totally cool with
him. Of course!
And glosses past
Starfucker defeats all of Alex's principles.
Also, just to be clear, his name is Kinky, but it's not meant to be a dirty thing. That's not about, like, sexual kinky.
I didn't care one way or the other.
It was a nickname given to him in college because of his curly hair. Interestingly, his nickname was given to him by a guy named Chinga...
George H.W. Bush.
No, someone named Chinga Chavin.
All right.
Who would mysteriously also go on...
Nope, you can't get cooler. Stop it.
This person would also go on to be a parody country artist.
No!
They released an album called Country Porn.
Nope.
In 1976.
I want to listen to this.
Which was distributed by Penthouse.
All right.
100% through the mail.
Give me everything.
And sold 100,000 copies.
Can you find this?
I think you can. The album included such songs as, this is one of the titles.
All right.
Come Stains on the Pillow.
Yes, more!
Parenthetically, still the title.
Parenthetically, of course, of course, of course.
Still the title, Where Your Sweet Head Used to Be. One of the other titles?
More!
One of the other titles? Sit, and then in parentheses, Sit on My Face.
That has to go down.
And then his classic hit, which actually Kinky Friedman would go on to cover later, and probably still does if he ever performs.
Okay.
Asshole from El Paso.
Oh, well, that,
which is
a
take on Okie from Muskogee by Merle Haggard.
Yeah, that's a winner right
so
there.
So all this is to say that Kinky Friedman has lived an amazing life.
Ah, oh, man.
And
beautiful.
Yeah. So at this point...
Why do we even need to hear him talk? I just want that biography to live forever.
Yeah, it's
That's
pretty great.
Beautiful.
I don't think he really does anything to invalidate himself on this episode. He just shows up as like, yeah, fuck yeah, I think I'm going to run for governor. And then just acts kind of like an asshole, but
all right.
Kind of a fun asshole.
All right, I'm in!
So in this first clip, we learn that he sells cigars.
Okay.
Listen, now I wish I had a cigar, an official cigar just made for Alex Jones with me on it, but Kinky actually has that. And, in fact, he even sells them. Tell folks about your love of cigars and your website, and then we'll get into the serious issues.
Well, I think cigars are good. I always say cigarettes bad, cigar good. That's my message to young people.
Because science.
And cigars are good for you, and they help you live longer.
All right.
All right.
Not a great message, Kinky. Not a great Kinky.
All right.
So this,
you know what? I'm still fine. I'm still fine with this.
This sets the tone.
As a smoker, I'm still fine with this.
This sets the tone and leads us to this.
You want to break the Austin ordinance on air and smoke in here?
We certainly could. Wouldn't bother me. I mean, what would happen, really? I don't think anything will happen.
SWAT teams might come.
Try it or not?
Go ahead, sure.
All right, we'll give it a shot.
Oh, now we're being really rebellious in Land of the Free, Home of the Brave.
Oh, my God, I'll tell you, Alex, we're risk takers.
Just thank God it's not a Cuban he's firing off here. Well, we'd really be arrested.
Well, this is a Cuban.
That's the inside joke. Yeah,
yeah, but.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, Kinky Friedman lights up a Cuban cigar on air.
Kinky Friedman, not giving a shit.
It's pretty great. They talk a lot of nonsense about him running for governor again. Because, again, he ran in 2006. Now we're here in 2009.
Can't stop.
So they discuss police corruption a little bit. Put your mic down.
Weird.
Put your mic down.
I'm way in.
This is so wild. This is buck wild.
It's city by city. You got bad cities and good cities on average, but I don't know. Cops in Austin aren't planting drugs that I know of, but in Dallas, NPR even reported, the police admit it, they framed thousands. Here's
one solution. Get a guy like Kinky Friedman in as governor who doesn't owe anybody and doesn't know anybody, okay? And I appoint a guy like Racehorse Haynes to head up an abuse commission. And this is a legacy for a guy like Racehorse. In other words, he doesn't need to do it. He's got plenty of money. He believes in justice. So he goes case by case, all through death row, all through Texas Youth Commission, through all of it, and empower these people. I don't want a commission giving me a report.
He wants to put a guy named Racehorse in charge of police corruption.
I agree with him.
Racehorse Haynes.
Racehorse has been on the wrong end of police corruption. I'll tell you that for sure.
I love
it. A guy named Racehorse? Come on.
Look, Racehorse, this is a legacy position.
Racehorse has had to bribe thousands of cops.
He doesn't need this shit. Racehorse is there for pure reasons.
Racehorse has made his money.
So we got Kinky and Racehorse.
I don't know how he made his money.
Holy shit. So fun. So fucking fun.
Give me that government.
Alex has no...
I think that government would probably be great, actually.
Might be effective.
I think it would be awesome.
Yeah. So that's all we're going to listen to of Kinky's appearance. Because most of it is really just like... He doesn't have any of his, like, standard Mark Twain witticisms on the show, and it's mostly Alex just trying to impress him, and it's kind
of... course.
It's a little sad.
It's a little pathetic.
Yeah. And he has to make time because he has another guest this day.
Right.
And that is a guy who does one of his bumper songs. It's a song, Thank God for the Renegades.
All right.
I
don't know this song.
You don't know it?
No.
I'm not going to play it. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't think
you
should.
It's an alright song. It's sort of a under the radar, country song. But like sort of newish country. It's like, it's in that no man's land of not old rebel country.
Alright, I'll let it go.
But he has him on and, this clip is fucking troubling.
I live in Southern California most of the time and, I got so dang frustrated with, you know, illegal streaming across the border, and that was the year of the riots in Los Angeles and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got to a point where I couldn't sit silently anymore. And so I wrote a song from my heart called We Must Take America Back. And it just, it lit a firestorm when people heard it. It kind of dribbled out there on its own. And, all of a sudden, one of the big record companies out there wanted to put it out on a record and make it available nationally. And I was right. You know, it was zooming up the charts, got to number 56 or 52 on the Billboard country charts. It was the most requested song in the nation on country radio the first few weeks it was out. But then a funny thing happened. Some of the most powerful, some of the most influential country radio stations in the big city said, hey, look, we don't care where it is on the charts.
These city slickers.
We don't care how many requests we get for it. We're not going to play it.
Always with their city
slickers.
Because
we don't agree with it. And that was the end of my RCA career.
Oh, man.
It was RCA. That was who picked him up?
He was screwed. He was screwed by the major labels. Alex ends up playing his song, and we're not going to listen to it, but it
But it has to go, it has to, like, I'm disappointed in his delivery, because it should be, I've been living in SoCal for a long time, and I got frustrated by all these illegals coming over. So I wrote a song about it, and it goes a little something like this.
Yeah, that should have been.
That's what it should have been.
Do a live performance.
Absolutely.
You notice that he's like, I'm pissed off about these illegals coming over. Also, that was the year of the riots.
Who is so it? Now, and the riots? Illegals.
And so now I have to make a song called We Have to Take Our Country Back. From whom were you inspired to, oh, Mexicans and black people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. That's not
strange.
Fucked up at all.
Strange.
That's not fucked up. That's your motivation. So anyway, he wrote this song.
So he's talking about the Rodney King riots.
Yes.
While they're talking about police.
Because he wrote that in 1992. That's when that song came
right,
out. Yeah.
Of course.
So that's when he wrote We Must Take Our Country Back.
Yes.
Song reached number 68 on,
so
on the
Alex
country.
Jones has made it clear that police are framing and murdering black people out of bullshit racist reasons.
Yet still having a guy on who wrote a song.
Wrote a song about
by,
how cops should be allowed to beat up black
we
people.
We must take that back.
Yeah.
The song reached number 68 on the Hot Country charts, which leads me to believe it was never the most requested song.
Almost 56.
Because by definition, there's 67 songs ahead of it that people like more.
Yeah, but they were requesting it. They didn't play it, though.
So it didn't make the regular charts at all, but it's actually really interesting. This guy, Steve Vaus, it's V-A-U-S. If you look into him, you find out that he does have 4 Grammy nominations to his name.
Oh, that's nice.
It's wild. But
is
it's
he
actually,
is he like a ghostwriter? Is he a songwriter?
He has 4 Grammy nominations, but it's not to his name. It's under a stage name, Buck Howdy.
His stage name is Buck Howdy?
He actually won a Grammy in 2010 in the category Best Spoken Word Album for Children.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
I'm in it so far.
So he's still a country musician today, and if you go to his Squarespace site,
BuckHowdy.com?
No, it's I think it's SteveVaus.com.
Oh, that's disappointing.
He refers to himself as a...
Who has Buck Howdy?
He probably is sitting on it. He refers to himself as a Grammy Award winner, hoping that people will just think it's because of his patriot country music.
Not
his I'm going to talk to children as a Buck Howdy character.
What was the?
Oh, no, I didn't listen to any
of this
shit.
Now I got to listen. How much shit do we have to listen to because of this show? We got to listen to the entire Kinky Friedman catalog.
Sure,
that's gotta happen.
And this,
we got to listen to this spoken word album.
We got to listen to "Come on the Pillow" or whatever.
Absolutely, got to listen to "Come on My Pillow."
So this brings
parentheses where your head used to be.
This brings us to the end of the show, so what we see here is Alex having a racist musician on.
Yep.
One of the greatest people ever to come out of Texas, Kinky Friedman on.
Absolutely.
To smoke on air for no reason.
Fantastic.
But at the end of the day, what we see here is very clearly in 2009, he's concerned with globalists, but he's
right.
Has no interest in George Soros. He's very anti-military, very anti-cop, but at the same time does recognize that black people are getting a fucking raw deal. And
weird.
All of these things change at some point.
Weird.
Yeah, very weird.
Except for his star fuckery.
No, that's consistent.
That is always going to be there.
Yeah. And the dumb relying on him not understanding sources.
The only way Kinky Friedman could have been better is if he did a, like, I wrote a little song about this InfoWars appearance.
Or just told Alex to fuck himself.
And it goes a little something like this. InfoWars is bullshit.
I'm sure his name
Alex
sounds way better
is
than
a fuck face.
All right, we gotta wrap this up. I gotta pee.
All right.
If you like our show, please go to our website, knowledgefight.com.
You can follow us on Twitter @knowledge_fight.
That's correct. We're on Facebook.
You are also capable of finding us on iTunes.
Yes.
You have to search for the words knowledge and then fight.
That's true.
If you search, KNOWLE, we are the 8th thing that pops up.
Hell
automatically.
Yeah. Stop vamping. I gotta
we're
pee.
Making it. All right. I think it's you.
Oh, okay.
I think it's you. You gotta pick.
It's Steve Vaus. Steve Vaus can go fuck himself.
There you go.
That guy wrote a fucking racist country song.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.